Tonight on Unsolved Mysteries Rewind, two friends get together to discuss episodes of their favorite television show, Unsolved Mysteries. Will they find answers? Will anyone care? You may be able to solve a mystery.
This is Mark, and you are listening to Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. I have on tonight Laura. How are you, Laura?
Pretty good, Mark. How are you going?
I'm going well. And good. We're right off of speaking to your dad about the Snowtown murders and the, you know, the bodies in the barrels. By this point, by the time this episode is released, we'll have released our fringe episode. Yet to be determined what we're going to call it.
Yes, bonus content, something.
Bum, ba, da, dum, bum, bum. That's it.
Love it.
But today we're discussing another murder. Not from Australia, from the States, from the great state of Texas. And both murders were in Texas, weren't they?
Yes, not far from each other.
And this is a very popular case. This is it's referred to as the Two Mary Murders.
Yes.
Two people who look nothing alike, these two women.
I wrote that. I do completely agree. The only thing that I can see that's a little bit similar are the eyes and the hair, but, you know, we'll get to that.
I want to have an exercise at some point where what you do is you take a piece of paper. I'll even pause the recording when we do this. And I just want you to look at their picture. And write like maybe five simple characteristics of each person and see if we can hit, you know, we're probably going to write the same exact thing, I think. So
yeah,
we'll do that in a little bit.
Sounds good.
But do you want to start this shindig, this crazy story?
Yes. So it is pretty shocking. It's a little bit different. So, yes, it is called The Two Mary Murders. That was the official name of the segment. I have the box set that I got in 2006, which has a lot of cases on there. So they all have a name. So this one's The Two Mary Murders. It was featured on Unsolved Mysteries Season 11, Episode 3. It first aired June 17th, 2002. But the crime itself happened in Houston, Texas, October 12th, 2000, and then October 16th, 2000. The victims' names were Mary Lou Henderson Morris and Mary McGinnis Morris. So
two
Mary Morris
who didn't know each other, as far as we know,
and had no connection except for the same name.
Yeah, and that seems to be the downfall. This is, in my opinion, the reason why they were murdered is primarily because of their names.
Yes. So I didn't find too much about the story in general, and what I did find was pretty much all the same. But I did kind of go down some rabbit holes and things that I found out some more interesting things on my old favorite sitcoms online, which we'll get to later. But
Should we follow the notes like a script? Like, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. I mean, I like to have things out pretty simply, but I think if we do the background of the victims first, it kind of gives everybody an idea of what the two ladies were like. So,
if you want to start it with the first Mary Morris, I'll take the second one.
Sounds good. So Mary Lou Henderson Morris, she was 48 years old. She was married to Jay Morris and had been married to him for 5 years. Mm-hmm. She had a grown daughter called Marilyn from her first marriage, but she was able to maintain a really good relationship with her ex-husband, which is good. And she had no known enemies. She was a bank loan officer for a large bank, and everybody loved her. She was just the all-American lady.
Mm. Now, Mary McGinnis Morris, I believe she was 39. Mm-hmm. So we're talking a 10-year difference, nearly.
Yeah.
She was a valedictorian in her high school in 1979, and she was into local theater. None of this is particularly spectacular, like, you know, shocking information. These were two regular, everyday people For all intents and purposes, there's really nothing like, oh, and she was the cousin of Jimmy Hoffa. Like, there wasn't any of that type of stuff. These are just what it appears to be two regular people, with families, just regular people.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
But the second Mary Morris had been married for 17 years to Mike Morris. Had a 16-year-old daughter, Katie. She worked in the medical field, and she worked for several medical clinics, and she was the medical director of Houston Union Carbide at the time of her death.
Yes, sounds fancy.
Yeah.
So they both had pretty good jobs, small families, seemed to be happy, and they were hardworking professionals with nice personalities and seemed to be well-liked, so... Yeah. Completely innocent people.
But that brings us to October 12th, 2000. 48-year-old Mary Lou Henderson Morris, who I'm just going to call the first Mary, maybe. Hard to distinguish these. Said goodbye to her husband, Jay. We get this reenactment where Jay's bringing her the coffee. And we get this vibe that maybe they had a pretty decent relationship. And she's driving off to work. I'm sorry, say that again.
They seem to be close if they spoke several times a day.
Yeah,
they obviously had a nice marriage. So,
yeah, and Jay had been reaching out, and Mary did not answer his calls. Jay reached out to her supervisor and learned that she'd never arrived at work. I don't know what the distance was between her house and work, but it's Texas, so it's probably like an hour and a half or something.
I don't think it was that far. I think I remember reading it was maybe half hour, which is still a decent drive, but it's not an hour and a half. So,
Of course, Jay was the last person that we know of that saw Mary, alive, and something happened between obviously her home and her work destination.
Hmm.
At about 10:20 a.m., smoke was reported in the area. It was estimated to be somebody burning off leaves, which has a pretty distinct smell. This is why I'm thinking, you know what leaves smell like, right? I mean,
yes.
That has a very distinct kind of wet, stinky, thick smell. If a car is on fire and a body is being burned, it's a very different smell.
I would think so, but maybe they just saw the smoke. Maybe they were too far away to actually properly smell it,
That's true, because the smoke was reported, not the smell.
Mm, yes.
But later, a badly burned body was found in the smoldering remains of the car only 3 miles away. So, let's see. Jay heard that the car about the car from a friend. Now, You were wondering why the friend would mention it, and I'm thinking probably not too much is going on. You hear about a car fire. I mean, these days we hear about everything, right?
Yes.
So you're right. I mean, in a way, it's kind of like maybe he was a firefighter. I don't know.
Like he just knocks on the door and goes, "Hey, did you hear about this car fire?"
But Jay heard about it, was worried, so he popped into his car with his stepdaughter Marilyn Blalock. And they drove to the scene. Blalock, Blalock. I'm sorry.
Blalock. That's all right.
And they drove to the scene, and the police sent them away.
Yes. So, yeah, sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off. But, they pronounced it Marilyn Blalock on the segment, so I went with that. So,
okay.
But, yes, Marilyn did say in the segment that she was frustrated that the police turned them away, but at this point they didn't really obviously know that it was – anyone they knew, they were hoping that it was, Mary was going to be in contact. And
what are the odds there? But I mean, I guess, I don't know, when you're a worry wart, you're following up on every lead.
Yes. And the fact that, I mean, I probably would put two and two, I would be very worried.
I mean, she's
as well.
Missing.
Yes. Yep. And then the remains were only found 3 miles from the home, so. I would put two and two together. I would be worried. So, they're not completely unfounded in that.
In the reenactment, we get a police officer comes and, breaks the terrible news that the victim was later identified as Mary Morris 1. We're just calling her Mary Morris 1. through the dental records. I mean, oh man, whenever I hear that in order to identify the body, it's through dental records, it's just heartbreaking.
Must mean it's really bad.
Her car was facing the opposite direction to the bank where she worked. She mentioned to Jay that she might stop off and get gas on the way to work.
I put petrol there deliberately.
I know, to get me. But then you call it a local gas station attendant, claimed that he saw a woman matching her description, but surveillance had already been taped over by the time the police tried to review it. So I wonder how much time had gone by.
Just about to say, I don't know. I know a lot of places that tape over it pretty much the day after.
Yeah, I collect a lot of vintage electronics. I might have gone down this rabbit hole. And I actually have a surveillance VCR.
Wow.
Yeah, it's huge. And it records on standard VHS tapes. And I believe it's 12 hours. You can do 12 hours and 24 hours.
Wow. And
so videotapes in 2000, I would imagine you probably would keep them for a couple weeks. I mean, if you have 24-hour ones, I mean, it's, you know, we're talking 14 tapes for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think 2 weeks is personally, I probably want to keep it for a month, you know, just in case, because it, with this sort of case, seems quite, you know, like there's lots of unanswered questions. So, not that the people with the surveillance tape in the gas station knew that they were going to be potentially witnessing someone that was going to be murdered, but yeah, they should have kept it for longer. You would hope that they would.
And this brings up another question. You know, we have surveillance cameras in gas stations now, or if you go to a 7-Eleven or anything, what is the time period that they are required to keep the footage?
Oh, there's got to be some sort of law. It might be different in different states, or it might just be a standard rule, but yeah, and you know, obviously some people don't follow that rule. You only want to use one tape, so they tape over it every 12 hours, like you said. And then,
well, here in New York, the video cameras don't even work. In the
subway. Yeah, there is that. I was going to get to that. Yes, there's a lot of places that actually are just there for show and don't actually work. A lot of Law & Order episodes say that.
We had a shooting just 2 weeks ago here in Manhattan, and the cameras weren't working because that's kind of where New York is going. But not going to get into any of that. But the bottom line is maybe make sure the cameras are working.
Yes, that's a good start. That's right. Because of the condition of the body, it was impossible to determine how Mary Morris, one, had been killed, but there seemed to be absolutely no reason as to why she would have been murdered. Marilyn said her mother was a good person, never did anything bad to anyone. She didn't gamble, do drugs, or even drink. Absolutely nothing.
I bet you this is all true, too. I bet you she was just like a regular, moral, sweet woman.
Yeah, she did seem like it from the segment. You know, it was very, very sad. And, you know, she had no enemies. A robbery seemed unlikely, although Mary's purse was taken, but her credit cards were never used. So, you know, was it taken as a trophy? We don't know. Some people do that. Her wedding ring was missing, but all her other jewelry was present, although it was melted down badly from the fire.
Now, that's the smoking gun right there. The missing wedding ring, and you bring it up later, is the smoking gun. And I have no doubt in my mind who did this, but we'll get to it.
Yes, I agree. Neither Jay Morris nor Mary's ex-husband, the one she was still in contact with and had a good relationship, they didn't seem like likely suspects, as they were very cooperative from the start. Mm-hmm. So this left the authorities baffled for some sort of motive in Mary Morris's murder.
Yeah, this is, let's see. Mary's funeral took place on October 16th. After the funeral, Marilyn Blaylock rang, that's an Australian thing, called the funeral home to ask about potentially getting her mother's melted jewelry back. So I was kind of wondering how this all works. So I guess with all the heat, of course, even gold, you know, gold is going to melt and all these things.
Yeah.
How, I mean, do you have to go through the wreckage. Wondering why would they call the funeral home for this? I would imagine the police would have. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't take it into evidence. Maybe they just thought, I mean, but fire doesn't destroy everything. As we know, people burn things a lot and they can still find, you know, they get a fire expert in, they can still find some evidence. I don't know why, but maybe the police just cleared it. They didn't need it as evidence.
But here's another question. All right, so they're saying that her wedding ring was missing, but the other, but the other jewelry had melted. I mean, if it's a gold ring, the heat would have melted it.
Yes.
So I don't know. Like, I mean, doesn't seem right to me. That's all.
Good point. Good point.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it kind of doesn't make sense. But
how could they tell that maybe the ring was melted in with the jewelry or the other jewelry?
Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't taken.
And if it's hot enough fire, I would imagine that it would vaporize gold.
Yeah, eventually, if it was really, really hot, yes.
Well, because, for instance, if you've ever seen, like, glass blowers use gold, they heat it and it vaporizes onto the glass and it creates this rainbow effect.
Have you ever seen that being done?
It's yeah, I had a friend who used to do glass blowing, like, in his bedroom, in the most dangerous situation ever. But yes,
yeah.
It's fascinating, right?
Why would you do it in your bedroom? I saw it in France when I went to France. It was amazing. I could not stop looking at it. Of course, it was in an actual factory, but...
He was doing it, like, with a blowtorch.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't really risk that.
So I was just sitting there watching. I was like, what? And, yeah, I've seen it explode, all that type of stuff, where it's...
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, that's Noah Gilbert out there. Yeah, maybe he's listening. But... But yeah, so you would use pure gold, you know, like, I don't know if it's 24 or 14 karat, but I know that gold will melt, obviously, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just not really sure why they think that the ring is missing. Maybe I'm just not sure. But they were informed that Mary's body was still in the morgue. Marilyn was horrified, and she's like, what are you talking about? I'm at the funeral right now. And you wrote, how upsetting would it be? Yeah, that would be incredibly upsetting. They learned not too long after that there was another Mary Morris who was in the morgue, which is shocking.
Very, and like you just go, that is not a coincidence. Like, what on earth? Like, that is just raw. And yeah, it would be very upsetting. You know, you'd think, do we just have a funeral for the wrong person? Obviously, it turns out it was the correct person, but you know, it was, I easily could get confused, but I don't think the funeral home should have made that mistake.
No,
really.
No.
I know they're the same name, but geez.
I bet it's never happened to them, though. I mean, what are the odds? I mean, Mary Morris might not be the most uncommon name in the world, but it's certainly not that common.
That's right.
Not like Jim Smith or something.
Yeah, John Smith, yeah.
But 4 days after the first Mary's death on October 16th, the body of 39-year-old Mary Morris II was found dead in her car, in the exact same spot, under nearly the same exact circumstances. There's no such thing as coincidences. This is not possible. This, in my opinion, is a red flag. This is a hit.
Yeah. That's where the first time I ever watched this segment, I thought, oh, yeah, it's got to be something planned.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Police began looking into Mary Two's life. She was the nurse practitioner, as we mentioned before. And she feared a man that she worked with. Do you want to go into a little bit about Dwayne Young? He seems like a real charmer.
Yes, yes. So he was a fellow co-worker. Very... very interesting character, we learn. One evening, Mary went to the office to pick up some papers. She found her office to be in disarray with picture frames turned over.
Ugh.
She also noticed that the man's desk, the co-worker's desk, had the words death to her written on a calendar.
What is with this guy?
So she obviously assumed that it was about her. Even if it wasn't, that's still a pretty weird thing to write on a calendar anywhere.
Yeah, it says so.
The next day, management advised Mary to stay home And when Dwayne came into work, he was promptly fired for harassment.
Now, this is what I don't get. What did he do? I mean, all right, was there... I mean, all right, he moved the pictures, from what I can tell.
So, from what I read before, it was... That was kind of the final straw. I think that there were a lot of things that were working up to...
I think
I found out that he had accused Mary of doing something that she didn't do, something about falsifying papers or something, and that was found not to be substantial. He just didn't like her. They just, you know, it could have been for several reasons, but, you know, I think this was kind of the last straw. And he apparently disagreed, and he made a big scene as he was escorted out, which we'll get into, but later on he claimed that he didn't actually make a scene, but we'll get to that. She allegedly told her husband, Mike Morris, that she was very afraid of Dwayne Young and she wanted a gun for protection.
It's Texas, after all, so we have open carry.
Yes.
And you don't need to go get a pistol permit. You just get the gun.
Yeah. Again, it's very foreign to me as we...
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. Yeah.
But yes, it is Texas. So after showing... After Mike showed Mary how to use the gun, he placed it under her car driver's seat.
Which is just kind of crazy. A few weeks later, she met her friend and former worker. We get to meet Lori Gemmel at the clinic. I don't really get much of a vibe from Lori. I don't know. She has funny hair. She doesn't... I don't know. I mean... I think that these people, these are people who never expected to be in front of a camera, right?
Yes.
So I think a lot of people can look as though they're holding back, but they're just not
comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, they never expected this to happen to one of their coworkers, and I don't know.
Yeah. And it was a pretty extreme way to go as well. The circumstances are very odd. So, I mean, I put this in there. I have read claims that Laurie knew more about what happened to Mary, mm-hmm. but I don't know how true that is. You could point your finger at anybody and say they know more.
But Laurie said she acted fine and claimed that she was going to stay a few more hours at the clinic and then she was going to run a few errands, go home and make dinner. Basic, you know, Mary, you know. Later that afternoon, she made an alarming phone call to Lori. She said that she had seen somebody in the drugstore that gave her the creeps. I don't know why that would warrant an alarming phone call, personally.
I don't know if it was so much the fact that someone had given her the creeps. It was the fact that she recognized the man.
Mm-hmm.
She mentioned to Lori that she thought she recognized the man and he maybe had met... And maybe had met him through Dwayne Young, so one of Dwayne Young's friends.
I meet people who are creepy every day.
Yeah, true. I mean, maybe she just got such a weird feeling and she thought something's not right. Maybe he kept staring at her. Maybe he was following her.
Which is probably going to end up being true, right? Because this is probably the murderer.
Yeah, yeah. It seems very much like it. I mean, Mary obviously felt threatened enough to call someone. Maybe she wanted to have Laurie on the phone in case something did happen as well. But anyway, Mary ended up ending the call saying she was quickly going to return to work, sign off of her computer and head home. But unfortunately she never made it because 12 minutes later she made a frantic 911 call. During the call she was apparently, what sounded like she was abducted and attacked by an assailant. The contents of the tape in question have never been released because in the segment they apparently claimed it's an incredibly disturbing and chilling call, and anyone who's ever heard that tape has had their blood chilled listening to it.
So it's probably, like you said, it's probably a recording of her being abducted.
Oh, so frightening.
I mean, I hate to be the person who wants to hear the tape, but I would like to know what's on that tape.
I would as well.
Because I believe they even said that it is the entire abduction and you hear what's going on. But they never release any of the information. But, you know, it's... I don't think we'll ever hear it.
I wonder how long it went for.
Yeah, I mean, it could have gone for 20 minutes for all we know.
Yeah,
I mean, it could have been 20 seconds.
I mean, it would be very, very unsettling to listen to, but I would like to hear it. I mean, yeah, I think if you've got a strong stomach and, you know, I think you should be able to hear it. I don't know. I guess I don't know why they're not letting people hear at least an excerpt of it, but
I don't think we'll ever have the opportunity to hear it, to be honest with you.
No, unfortunately not. But obviously it was not a good call, and Mary was found dead soon afterwards. The medical examiner determined that she had been beaten and shot once in the head. The killer tried to stage the scene to make it look like a suicide. Meaning the gun was left at the scene, and it was the gun that was registered to Mary's husband, Mike, the one that he had placed under the car seat.
Do you think she tried to get the gun?
Probably.
I have this hope that she would have at least tried to kill this guy.
Yeah, I hope she was able to fight back at least a little bit. I hope she injured him in some way. Unfortunately, it wasn't good enough. But, yeah, maybe she got a punch in or something. But it would have been just so scary and so, yeah, not nice. What's interesting, just as with Mary Morris 1's case, Mary Morris 2, her wedding ring was also missing. So there's one thing that's linked to there. Investigators found blood on the passenger door, which was left open, and the keys were outside the car. Mary had torn clothing, bruise marks on her wrists, and there was evidence that she had actually been gagged. So the suicide theory was pretty much debunked straight away, which I think is good, because you see a lot of cases, even in Unsolved Mysteries, there's been a few cases where, you know, someone's been found dead from one gunshot, and there's so much evidence to prove it's not a suicide, but they just say, oh, it's a suicide. He was depressed or she was depressed. It's a suicide. And the family goes, well, no, because this, and this, you know. And I'm glad they ruled that out, because there was a lot of evidence that showed that someone else was there. So
on paper, though, first person that we look at is Dwayne Young, right? The former coworker. He was hired as a temp nurse, but often questioned Mary's authority and would complain about her to other workers. So this is where it's kind of interesting is, so there were death threats from him, apparently. I mean, were there death threats outside of what he wrote on his calendar? I wonder.
I don't know. I couldn't find any other evidence of that, but maybe he did say to other people, you know, said, I'd like to hurt her, or...
I'd like to know why, like, just like you would like to know why they had this rivalry. Yeah, they seemed to hate each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more from his side. I think Mary was just trying to, you know, do her job. I don't think that... I mean, obviously she had the right to defend herself when he accused her of... I think it was a faking a lab report. I think I put down here, Dwayne Young himself claimed on Sitcoms Online he suspects he was fired because he made an allegation against Mary about a fake lab report. Now, obviously Mary would have said, well, no, I know how to do my job, and why would I fake a lab report? So maybe he might have been a bit upset about that, but I don't understand why he would dislike her so much. It could be as simple as jealousy over her seniority over him. That she was a woman. Some people are like that, or maybe it was just a clash of personalities. But
Dwayne and Mary were in similar social circles because they even attended each other's parties in the past.
Yeah. So obviously Mary was trying to be a bit friendly, you know.
And him too, it seems.
Yeah, it's very,
very
strange.
Odd, very strange. And I think maybe he regrets his anger towards her because he was number one on the suspect list.
Yes. Investigators say that they may have evidence to link the coworker to the crime, but
nothing.
You know,
we don't learn anything about that.
Yeah, I think only just the bad work relationship and the fact that he left on bad terms. I think that's probably the only thing. But however, you know, the police kind of have to look into something like that. No matter how frivolous it is, they kind of that's their job.
But now we get to the person who actually did it. I mean, well, maybe. And that's Mary's husband of 17 years, Mike, who I think, without a doubt, may likely have been involved on some level with this.
Oh, yes. Well, I tend to agree there. But Mike claimed that he was at the movies with his daughter, Katie, at the time of the murder. But I'm just going to say that not many 16-year-old girls would want to go to the movies with their much older daughter. It's not seen as cool enough, just saying. But, I mean, I think I think I went to the movies with my dad when I was 16, but I wasn't.
You're not cool.
I wasn't cool.
I think that it happens probably more than you think, but at the same time, it's probably wouldn't be their first choice.
Yeah, you know, if she'd rather go to the mall than a movie with her friends, I'm sure she would have rather have done that. But, you know, maybe they were at the movies. We don't know. But
this brings us to the polygraph test, which neither one of us give any credence to. It's garbage. Nope. It's trash. I don't even. It's like voodoo.
Yes. Yes.
It's wishful thinking.
So Mike refused to take a polygraph test and he would not let his daughter be interviewed by police. I guess he had that right because she was, what, 16? So,
well, you know, her mother was just killed.
Yeah, exactly. Why would you not want
to? On one hand, I think these are fine. Like, I wouldn't. Would you take a polygraph test? Yeah, you would. I think we have to take polygraph tests for the show.
Yeah, look, I would take one, but I don't place much validity in them. I just, yeah. But, you know, Mike might have the same sort of concerns that we have about it, you know. But, you know, in the segment, he claimed that he didn't want to take a polygraph because he was on high anxiety and antidepressant medications. He was unsure if the test would, quote, adequately compensate for all those things.
That's unquote. An attorney talking.
Yes, yes. It sounds like a bit of an excuse, but as I said, he may just feel polygraph tests are not accurate. I don't want to be accused of something I didn't do. You know, you might have heard other stories about people that have taken tests and they've been lied to by the police saying they failed and actually didn't because police have been known to do that.
Why would that sound like an attorney? And that brings us to the next.
Yes, yes. He did hire an attorney shortly after the murder.
Yeah.
But also, sorry, going back to the fact that his daughter was not allowed to be... No, that's okay. The fact that Katie was not allowed to be interviewed, Mike refused. Maybe, yes, she was young and everything, and yes, she was distraught. Her mother was just killed, which would be horrible. But maybe Katie wouldn't back up his alibi at the time. Maybe if she was allowed to be questioned, she might have revealed something against Mike or something that a comment he might have made or something that might have drawn suspicion to him. So maybe he's covering his own butt that way.
Well, they would have definitely gone after, like, well, do your parents fight? You know, all of these type of things. They would have definitely gone that route.
Yes. And she did clarify that later, which we'll talk about later. But, yes, as I said, he did hire an attorney shortly after the murder.
Which is what I would do, too, personally, I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I probably would as well if it seemed like they were, I mean, unfortunately, the spouse is always pretty much the first suspect. It's like a common thing.
You watch all these true crime things, right, where they're interrogating a suspect, and I'm like, I would have had an attorney by now. Like, first thing I would say, I want my attorney.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, And Mike claimed in the Unsolved Mysteries segment, he was following some advice of friends that just said, you know, when you're interviewed, just go in with a lawyer because they're familiar with law enforcement tactics. They'll be able to guide you and everything. Yeah. I can understand that point. I don't know how soon he lawyered up, but sometimes it can make you look guilty and like you have a lot to hide. But, you know, sometimes, you know,
but you can't be charged for looking guilty.
Yeah, that's right. Innocent until proven guilty. So, yeah, exactly right.
I'd rather look guilty and be innocent than to go into like a 12-hour interrogation without any protection.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
But so let's see. Investigators learned that Mike and Mary were having problems with their marriage shortly before the murder. Mike confronted Mary about an alleged affair that she was having with a friend. She and the friend both denied anything inappropriate. And you know, I mean, this is like, you know, stuff that happened, I guess.
Yeah.
Mike had followed Mary on several occasions because of distrust, which it seemed as though maybe he had every right to distrust her. And if this was true, of course, it was frustrated that he was having trouble finding work since they moved to Houston. Mary's sister Stephanie claimed Mary once told her that she had fallen in love with someone else, but didn't want to leave her husband and wanted to try to make it work. Now, why would somebody say that?
Yeah, do we really
twist the knife? You know.
Yeah, I mean, look, just maybe she had fallen in love with someone else, but maybe she, the person.
How does that help today?
What was that? Sorry.
How does that help today? To
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I don't think Mary was having an affair. I mean, I don't know. I can't really prove it, but I just think that, you know, she, you know, I think every marriage does have problems. You know, I mean, Mike seemed like he was going through a bit of a tough time. He, you know, couldn't find work and he was frustrated, and maybe he was just a bit threatened by Mary's successful career and he was just a bit upset, and you know, maybe part of, you know, some people might think he seemed controlling and possessive and jealous, especially if she wasn't having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think every marriage has some problems to a certain degree. Sure.
But at the same time, it would be very tempting for him to do something if he was going to get a windfall of money.
Yes.
And what is that windfall of money all about?
Yes. So investigators discovered that there was a life insurance policy that Mike had taken out on Mary that totaled $700,000.
Hmm.
And one of the biggest motives for murder is money.
Now, I'm wondering if he had a policy as well.
I was about to say, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Was it just upped? Was it her idea? You know, there are a lot of variables here that we aren't privy to.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could have been like many couples that say we want to take insurance policy out on each other in case something happens to one of us, we can, you know, be financially stable to look after the children and ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could have been as easy as that, to which, you know, that seems quite normal. But yeah, I mean, did Mary know about this policy? Did Mike take it out without really?
So it's starting to look kind of weird for Mike. But investigators discovered that the murderer, I mean, Mike, had called her cell phone around the time Mary was murdered. The call was 4 minutes long. So this is one of these things where it was just completely, my BS meter just went bloop, bloop, bloop. He's saying that he tried calling her over and over again with a CG, you know, tried, and it went on for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm calling your phone and it's just ringing, it doesn't, maybe these days you can see, but back in those days, you wouldn't pay for the phone ringing.
No, it would only show up on the phone companies, like on the phone bill, if the call was actually answered, and surprise, surprise, it showed up on Mary's cell phone bill.
Yeah. 4 minutes.
You know, I had several questions about this. I thought, was Mike just proving my point where I said he seemed controlling and he wanted to know where his wife was every minute?
Right.
Especially after the affair rumors. And did he just let it ring? Or did he make the call the actual killer that he'd organized to see if the, quote, job had been done, unquote? But what I didn't understand was, if he was as possessive and controlling as he appeared to be, why didn't he keep trying to call her over and over again? You know, why did he just, because when I'm trying to get a hold of my dad or something and it's an emergency, you know, I don't just let it ring.
Right.
I will try again in a couple of minutes or try several times, keep ringing and ringing and ringing. But those other calls didn't show up on her cell phone bill. So
this is also before, this is a good, I'm going to say it's a good 5 or 6 years before texting and SMS messages.
Yes, that's right. But I did find I did think of a rebuttal to these questions. Maybe Mike stopped calling because he had a feeling that something was really wrong. Mary wasn't getting back in touch with him, or maybe another person informed him of Mary's death, but I found that to be debunked because Mary's body wasn't actually found until 8 a.m. the following day.
Wait, I have a question. All right, so Mary number two is in the medical field, right?
Yes.
Because, all right, around this period of time, I used to have a pager that you could call and an operator would answer it and you could leave a message for me. And what that person would do is send me a message on my pager that I could read.
Oh, I never had a pager.
Now, if I had a pager, right, for like an IT or design situation, why wouldn't somebody in the medical field have the same exact pager?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know why.
It's kind of interesting. And I would just imagine that there would be a different, it would just add to this entire thing because I would be able to get like two sentences on this like device. All right. I don't know.
That's a very good thought. I mean, maybe her role didn't really require a pager, but it seemed like a pretty important role.
It seemed like it might have. I mean, she was giving people shots and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, interesting.
It's more important than what I was doing. Certainly. But I guess it's all a matter of, what access they had and budget and all that kind of stuff. But, just having a cell phone, I guess, was kind of pricey even back then. I got my first cell phone in 1999.
I got my first one in 2004.
Oh, do you still have the same phone number?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So, holy cow. No way I was going to change that because, it took me years to blimmin' remember it. So
what was it, 18 years that you've had the same phone number?
Yeah,
I've had mine for 23 years.
Wow.
I was going to Woodstock 99, like the big festival. And
I went to that with
my now wife. And we, I wanted a cell phone because I'm like, I want to be able to not get lost. And it was good that I had it because that was like a complete riot. It was like,
yes,
crazy.
I know, I heard.
It was fun. Yeah. the car was right. On fire, almost landing on me. Hey.
I was 10.
I was sunburned. That's what I was. You were 10. I was sunburned.
Oh, ouch.
And hungry because they ran out of food. But that's all. Maybe we should cover the crimes of Woodstock 99 one day. There are crimes, but I mean, nothing that, I don't think anything that would fall into this realm. So let's see. Now, I want to know, I was going to pause the thing and have you write down the basic elements, like just write down maybe five or six simple things that you would say identify Mary 1 and Mary 2 that are similar and see if we are writing the same exact thing. Are you willing to? All right, so I'm going to pause it right now. And we're back. That was fun. So do you want to read your list first? The identifiable marks of the two Marys.
Yes. So they both had brown hair, or looked like it.
I got that one.
Bingo. They both have shortish hair.
Yeah, I said poofy hair.
Poofy.
It's a similar kind of cut.
Yeah, yes, that's true. They're both Caucasian.
Yep, I got that. White.
Yep, they're both female.
I didn't write down female for some reason.
And they both have like what looks to be similar eyes, which possibly are brown.
Yeah, I wrote down brown eyes. But I also write that they appear to have like being similar weight and maybe even similar height.
Yeah, it is hard to tell from the photo because it looks like the first Mary Morris is standing in the photo and the second one is sitting.
But they do look like they're the same kind of build, I guess.
Yes, like, medium. Well, I would say
like normal.
Average size.
Like
normal,
average.
Normal. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if we were to just say, all right, find a white woman with big poofy hair, big poofy brown hair. Average weight, average height, brown eyes, female. Both of these people tick those boxes.
And they have the same name.
I don't know if one thing that nobody discussed is if they both drove the same car.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I couldn't find anything out about the cars.
Yeah. But, nobody talked about that. Isn't that kind of weird?
Yeah, that would be interesting to know. Especially, it would make much more sense if it was a hit if the cars were very, very similar.
Yeah, like if one car was gray and one was red, I mean, it was a big difference. But
yeah, that's right.
If they're both like Buicks or something like that, it's like kind of strange.
Interesting.
But yeah, I couldn't find anything about the cars.
Now I'm curious.
Yeah, right? But yeah, so the thing that we last left on was the 4 minute long conversation. That is proof that a conversation did happen. We just don't know what occurred during those 4 minutes.
Exactly. And I really shudder to think. I mean, in the segment, he couldn't explain why. He still can't to this day explain why the call showed up.
Now, the smoking gun that you came up with, which blew me away, is about Katie. And could you please talk about this? Because this is the smoking gun.
Yes.
You can almost hear them saying, kill her and get the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could not believe this when I read it. It was insane. So, interestingly, Mary's missing wedding ring suddenly surfaced a few months later when a friend noticed that her daughter Katie was actually wearing it, which the friend is good to notice that. I would immediately be suspicious.
Also, is that true? Like, is this verified?
I just read it and I'm like, well. Yeah.
But where did you get that information? Do you recall?
I got it from,
the internet.
I think I've heard about it it was on the fandom, Unsolved Mysteries fandom page, but also one of the podcasts I listened to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was a couple of sources.
All right.
And, but
that's
apparently
shocking.
They were,
to me, that's shocking.
Yeah. And apparently the friend sort of questioned them and said, oh, you know, Mary's wedding ring. So they claimed that they had found it and that Mary must not have been wearing it at the time of the murder. So I'm guessing it was Katie and her father, Mark, that sort of explained. But why would Mary not be wearing her wedding ring when most married women never take theirs off?
Yeah.
You know, did she take it off because she and Mike were fighting? You know, did she just take it off in anger? Was it due to her medical job she wasn't allowed to wear it? Or was Katie lying and Mary was actually wearing it at the time of the murder and maybe her dad lied to her and said, oh, your mother wasn't wearing it, when in fact she really was?
Because what are the odds that if the first one actually was missing, that the second one would be missing as well?
Mm. Yep. Again, red flags.
Definitely.
But Mike also never reported to the police that the ring had been found, which you think is something that the police would obviously want to know. And they learned this from the family friend. So the family friend obviously was suspicious enough to go to the police and say, that wedding ring you thought was missing actually isn't missing. So back to Mary's car, Mary Morris 2's car, the doors were said to have automatically locked when the car was put into gear, yet the passenger side door was wide open. This created speculation that the killer had access to the car.
Hmm.
So, you know, would Mike have known the car well enough? Did he take the ring and claim he found it, then let his own daughter wear his dead wife's ring? Was he given the ring by the killer, the hitman?
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Because it's proof. This is the proof. It's done.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, I just went, what, you know? And that was never mentioned in the Unsolved Mysteries segment either. So until you delve into the case, you wouldn't know until you read up on that. Did you want to continue with the next part or?
Yeah, sure. There's a lot of similarities in the two cases. A contract may have been put out on Mary 1's life, but the...
Mary
2's life, but the killer accidentally killed Mary 1. See, I wouldn't be a good murderer. He then corrected his mistake, obviously. And there's even that trend of taking the ring. But this is interesting. The theory of this was supported by a caller to a Houston newspaper called The Chronicle, who said that, quote, they had gotten the wrong Mary Morris the first time. No kidding. Lurie Gimmel, who I guess is the person who is on the working at the newspaper, looking for the scoop, claimed to have verified this call with a worker at the newspaper. You're asking how credible is Lori? I would say not very credible because it's... You're trying to get the scoop. I mean, this is... Anybody would ask the same question. I question if that call was even made.
Yeah, and they're saying that if it was made, that Dwayne Young, the co-worker, actually made it. Now, Dwayne Young actually obviously denies this and says he never made the call, but several people still accuse him of it. So, you know, In a way, if he wasn't involved, I feel bad that he's being targeted, but, you know, maybe don't be such an ass at work.
But the killer had done such a thorough job torching Mary Lou's car that it couldn't even be... And Mary Lou is Mary 1, right?
Yeah.
That it couldn't even be determined whether she was beaten, shot, or sexually assaulted. Now, she was... we don't know if she was shot in the way that Mary 2 was. So, It's all very shocking. They couldn't determine the exact time she died, so there were a lot of holes in the evidence to prove that there's a connection between both of the Marys. Mary Lou's wedding ring was missing, as we said. It's kind of a sign of a hit because the killer's going to take that, bring it back. You know, it feels like a Sopranos episode. And it just
seems... Where the episode cuts out mid...
Yeah.
Mid-sentence.
Did I cut out?
No. Oh. Remember the last episode of Sopranos just finishes?
Spoiler alert. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. So it just cuts out, like, and you're like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, I thought it was a good ending. But you know, they kind of had a similar in appearance type of thing. I mean, this is all kind of adding together as it was just a mistaken identity thing, which is so sad.
Yeah.
It was definitely a hit. Right? I mean, what do you think? Was this a hit or was this random?
It totally seems like a hit to me. I mean, but it's funny. I think it is, but the police ended up turning away from this possibility. I don't see how they did, but their sort of reason for thinking this was one of the officers said, unless you have a total bumbling hitman looking for the first Mary Morris that they can find, it doesn't seem like a viable option.
Right.
It's like, well,
but what about if that's a total bumbling hitman?
Yeah. I said, we don't know about how professional he actually is, but if he was professional, wouldn't he have known more about the victim?
This guy could have been hired out of the penny saver, which you probably don't know what a penny saver is.
I know what a penny saver is.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But yeah.
I got that from the movie Juno, when she finds the couple that she's going to adopt her baby at in the penny saver.
Oh, right. But it's always the joke, like, you know, you don't hire anybody out of the penny saver.
Someone, Mike, could have just, it could have been a friend of a friend or someone that just, you know, wasn't really professional. Because if he was professional, he would have found out more about the victim, like her address, the type of car, her work address, route to and from work. There's nothing that seemed to link the two Marys except their name, the way they were killed and the slight resemblance. But then again, going on the 180, maybe the killer wasn't actually a professional, hence his big mistake in killing the first Mary Morris the first time, and then the brutal nature of the crimes. Because if it's a hit, usually there's just one gunshot, swift gunshot, behind the left ear.
I mean, on paper, it probably made a lot of sense. Saying, you know, Mary Morris. How many Mary Morrises are there? She's a white woman. She's this height. She's this weight. She's got the big poofy hair. That's definitely her.
Yes. Although, I mean, the 10-year age difference, though, like, they definitely don't look the same age.
They definitely don't, but I don't know. I'm going to guess that hitmen are not exactly critical of all of that.
Yeah.
They're almost like, all right, 40, 50 years old, whatever.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
it's a young guy who can't tell the difference, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was professional, but it definitely was a hit. Like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't someone that did this all the time, but it was someone that was, yeah, I think picked out the penny saver type thing, but
you found that there were over 300 murders that happened in Harris County in 2000, And the police are saying that one apparently cannot rule out the possibility of two women with the same name that were killed at the same time, which I don't buy at all. I just don't buy it. It's too impossible.
Neither do I. It's too much of a coincidence. That's just, And obviously the victims' families are certain that the case is not coincidental at all, which we agree with. There's got to be some connection. It's just too far-fetched for them to be not related. So
6 months later, though, you found some really interesting information.
Yes. Her husband, Jay, so Mary Morris One's husband, Jay, received $2,000 in bills for his wife's phone card. So detectives were obviously intrigued.
Which I don't know what that is. Like, I don't really understand what a phone card is. Like,
maybe it's just meaning the phone bill.
Maybe.
Yeah, like maybe, or maybe like a SIM card or something. I don't know.
But she's, but the, well, I'm sorry, go on. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. So detectives were intrigued and they traced them, the calls to a 16-year-old Galveston girl in March 2001. She told detectives she actually found the purse that was missing with the card and other belongings a month earlier, sitting in the parking lot of a Galveston convenience store.
Hmm.
So Galveston is about 51 miles away from Houston. So you wonder how did the purse get so far away? Could it just be a throwaway purse by the contract killer to throw the police off?
Mm-hmm.
Because the credit cards were never used. However, what's interesting is that Mary Lou's family didn't recognize the purse as belonging to her. But then, it's kind of strange that they didn't recognize it. But then again, me personally, I don't take too much notice of the handbags that one of my family members has. So, maybe it was one that was a brand new handbag or.
I think it's interesting that the police didn't investigate if any other cards were being used.
Well, apparently they never were.
But, it's 6 months after the killing they are.
Only the phone card was used, not the credit cards.
But I'm just thinking a phone card would be. I'm just not really sure what a phone card is in reference to. I don't even know if they had SIM cards back in 2000.
What is a phone card?
Well, I think a phone card is something you put money on and you dial it and you make a call through it, like a VPN, at least back in those days.
Yes, here we go. A prepaid card which allows the user to make phone calls up to a specified number of units using, so basically right.
So it's almost like, were there credit cards missing and this person added $2,000 to a phone card? I'm just not really, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very, not sure. No, that's interesting. But another thing that I found out, which I found was very, very interesting as well, was around the same time, poor Jay, he's gone through a lot, received three phone calls to his unlisted number from someone asking for Mary, so Mary Morris One. Jay didn't inform the man that Mary was deceased, but the third time that the man called, Jay gave him the number of the police detective who was working on the case and said to the man, you could reach Mary at that number. Man sort of laughed and said, oh, yeah, sure, and then hung up and never called back. The call was traced to an apartment in Baytown, but the lead went no further. The caller remains unidentified and it is unknown if they are actually connected to the case at all.
So they know where it came from, but they don't know who made the call?
Yeah. It's like, it just seems they're like, oh, that's just a false lead. It's a prank, it's just a joke.
Seems like the police are dropping the ball on this one.
Yes, I agree. I mean, how could you not know, like in an apartment in Baytown, so obviously someone's living in that apartment.
Somebody made the call there.
So they're just like, oh, there's the apartment. Oh, yeah, dead end. No. So, seriously?
Mike Morris eventually moved back to West Virginia with his daughter, Katie, and somehow sleeps at night, I guess.
Yeah.
Continues. Is he still around? Do you know if he's still alive?
Yeah, he's still around. One thing that really annoyed me, and it made me just go, what on earth did I just hear him say? On the Unsolved Mystery segment, he claims he had nothing to do with the arrangement of Mary's murder.
Mm. Yeah, this is a really, really interesting thing, because words matter, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes this is something that the truth likes to come out. Like, if you watch a lot of political stuff like I do, you'll hear a lot of like little errors. Like, they're about to say something, then they change their mind, they go a different way. The truth naturally wants to come out of us. We want to tell the truth as humans. So I'm sorry if you can go on with the.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, I just did a double take when I heard it, though. I said, did he just implicate himself?
Mm-hmm.
How did he know her murder was arranged? You know, I just.
It had nothing to do with the arrangement of Mary's murder.
Yeah, it's almost like you should, if that's the case, you say I had nothing to do with Mary's murder.
Right.
You don't say with the arrangement of Mary's murder. Like, that was just, it's almost like, the Snowtown people going, I have no idea how that person was gutted and dismembered and ended up in an acid-filled barrel. I don't know how they ended up in Snowtown Bank. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what? That's just, ridiculous. But, so the case received national news, which is kind of like news coverage, which is good. Obviously on Unsolved Mysteries, America's Most Wanted, Good Morning America, and the Montel Williams Show. Now, Mary McGinnis's sister, so the second Mary Morris, her sister Stephanie, and Mary Lou's, so Mary Morris One's daughter, Marilyn Blaylock, have since become quite good friends.
Which is nice,
Yeah, they sort of, became friends and share in their mutual grief over the similarities of the murders, losing a loved one. Marilyn even moved herself and her three children to live closer to Stephanie. So, which is quite nice. But so it brings us to a bit of a rabbit hole that I found. Well, not really a rabbit hole, but I found it on sitcoms online.
It's always where it's like the bottom of, I don't even know what to call sitcoms online. It's basically where everybody kind of shows up to scream at each other.
Yeah, and one user named Koala has a lot to say, or had a lot to say a few years ago. Now, this user named Koala is apparently Mary's co-worker, Dwayne Young.
Right.
So Dwayne always denied any responsibility in Mary's murder, not the arrangement of Mary's murder, just Mary's murder, including the call that claimed that the first Mary was killed accidentally. So, like I said, he did deny that. He makes a lot of interesting statements online and claims that the police put an order in place that stopped him from talking to the media. And he was annoyed that Unsolved Mysteries didn't contact him for his input into the segment either. And the police sort of played with him a little bit. They apparently told him he failed polygraph tests but refused to show him the results.
Which is another reason why I would never take a polygraph test. Like, what?
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to be lied to. I mean, you answer all of them and you fail one and it's like, what? But he seems to agree with us about the validity of polygraph tests and the fact they don't stand up in court. Other posters question why Dwayne was being so active online, trying to prove his innocence, as it looks more and more like he's trying to sway suspicion away from himself.
But nobody's this is not an active investigation, even probably several years ago. Do you think?
No, I don't think it's still active. Yeah. I think, if police weren't looking really into the other leaks back then, they're not doing it now.
Do you recall how old these posts are?
I think it was 2005.
Okay, so it's not, it's only 5 years later.
Yeah. So things still would have been pretty hot. But like I said, the police, that I think they didn't look into things that they should have looked into,
You think Dwayne Young is still around?
Yeah, I think he still is. And I mean, I've read a lot of what he's written. I tend to believe that he really didn't have anything to do with Mary's murder.
Yeah, me either.
I still think it's Mike Morris. I mean, some of the stuff Dwayne Young says as Koala, it's a bit, he does go on and on a lot, but if you want to prove your innocence, some people just really want to get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But in response to this, Lori Gemmell, Mary's daughter Katie, and her sister Stephanie have had heated exchanges with him online, and that was around 2005. Stephanie replied to him and obviously believes he's somehow involved. She said, quote, "I see your true colors, Dwayne. Guess that's why Mary was so afraid of you. She knew your past and saw you for what you were worth."
Weird. Definitely weird.
Yes, and she also claims that, again, he is, in fact, the one that called the Chronicle with the mishit theory and states he has caused their family a lot of grief and that he just needs to put, you know, leave Mary and her family alone.
That's crazy. So Katie replied, stating that, yes, her friends had problems, but we're working through it.
A parent.
Wait, what did I say? I'm sorry. Katie.
You said friends.
Oh, did I say friends? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Well, they were friends. That they were working through them and her father is innocent. She maintains he indeed was at the movies with her when her mother was killed and the life insurance policy wasn't paid to them and won't be until the case is solved, which I think is not true.
You think it's not true?
No, I mean, they have to at some point pay out, don't they? I mean, you can't just have it in limbo.
Oh, I don't know.
If that's the case, then the case would have to be considered. Here's the thing. If the case is closed, I would imagine a decision would need to be made.
Yeah,
it's a closed case, unless it's an active case.
Look, I think obviously the case is still unsolved, which is a shame. But
in 2005, I imagine that it was open.
Yes, in 2005, it would still be open. So, yeah, I think obviously any new leads that the police would welcome them and maybe reopen things and look again. But it was interesting to get Katie's point of view. But you look, I mean, Mike Morris is her only living parent now. You know, if they're a close relationship, chances are she's going to back him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he might be lying to her. He might say he had nothing to do with it, but he did. And she's just like, okay, I believe your dad, no problems.
And here's her ring.
You know, here's the ring. I still think Mike Morris knows more than he's telling. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know if he's the person who killed. Of course, we're kind of, you know, joking around about that. But it's very possible that he knows more than what he's saying.
Yeah, I think he does. Yeah. Like you said, he may not be completely involved, but he knows more. And apparently, one thing I didn't mention in here, but I did remember just now, Dwayne Young actually tried to contact Mike Morris and Katie answered the phone and said, you know, my father doesn't want to speak to you, like, leave us alone. So obviously Dwayne is kind of pushing some buttons with people. He wants people to know he's innocent and he's just bugging everybody. But, you know, I even heard one rumor that it was a possibility that Dwayne Young and Mike Morris were involved together but I doubt that.
Yeah, I don't see that so much, but I can see Dwayne and Mary maybe at some point.
Dwayne and Mary what?
Getting together, like hooking up.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't see that? That's what I kind of saw this as. Kind of like maybe it was a relationship that went sour and now there's this hostility with the husband.
Oh, interesting. I never thought of that. Maybe they didn't really hate each other. Maybe they were just like putting on a show.
Or maybe they hated each other. I don't know.
Maybe they loved each other, but they hated each other. Tempestuous relationship.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Dwayne never said in the post that they were romantically linked. Yeah. In fact, he even denied making a scene when he was fired. You know, obviously people hit back and say, we have proof, rah, rah, rah. So, yes.
Well, Dwayne, if you're listening, reach out to us.
Yeah, reach out. Yeah, koala. but unfortunately, the case does remain unsolved. Yeah. And, you know, it's just so sad what happened to both Marys. They seem like such lovely people. And
it's
just
a real shame.
Didn't deserve what happened to them. And two families destroyed and people under clouds of suspicion. And just really sad.
And that ring on Katie's finger.
Yeah. That damn ring.
That's the smoking gun. Telling you. But Laura, as always, thank you so much for doing this episode. I do appreciate it. And I look forward to doing another one very soon.
Yes, me too. So, pleasure to be a part of it. And here's to more cases in the future.
Yeah, if you want to reach out to Laura, you can find her at laura@stillunsolved.com or me, Mark, M-A-R-K, @stillunsolved.com.
Tonight, we have been confronted with an entire catalog of unexplained and unsolved events. Tune in next time as Unsolved Mysteries Rewind discusses another collection of unsolved mysteries. Until then, we can only look and wonder.